Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air, everybody. It is another Wednesday. We are so happy to be back in our favorite little safe space, aren't we, Alex?
Holding space every Wednesday. Yeah. Dan and I on air. How have you been?
I've been great. I've been thinking a lot of this week about how much I love coming on the podcast and just feeling like this is the one platform where we can just say whatever we want and we can just not really worry about people hating on us or whatever. It's just like, it is a safe space. It's a wholesome,
I'm having visions. I'm having visions of playing that clip and then having like a 60-minute Australia piece where it says like, those were Dan's last words before he was cancelled for something that you tweeted in 2020.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, no one go on my Twitter, please. I don't know what is on there, but nothing bad. Anyway, how are you?
Good. Not too bad. You didn't travel over the last week, but we were conversing about various things that happened in the aviation world. Just quickly before we start, what did you think of that United loss of altitude event that they're calling a technical event on the 787? Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so it's pretty fresh. There was a United 787. It was operating a flight over the continent of Africa, and I believe it was in the airspace of Ivory Coast at the time. It was a flight going to Lagos, Nigeria. It was either going or coming back from. I think it was coming back. Heading back to the US, and they had suffered two what they're calling sudden losses of altitude, where the aircraft lost altitude on two occasions, leading to everything in the cabin flying up, including anyone that wasn't buckled in. It was the middle of the meal service, meals and drinks splattered everywhere. I'll give you a chance to have a look at the footage, and that because there is pretty scary, very similar to the LATAM incident that we spoke about. That was also a 787, and that was going to New Zealand. The bit that I found concerning, and it's still early days, and that's why there's not much room to discuss this yet, but United immediately referring to it as a technical event, not as turbulence, as, for example, sudden severe turbulence or clear air turbulence. Now, I'm watching this really closely, because if this follows a similar pattern as the likes of the LATAM 787 thing, then, and if there are similarities, we know it had to do with the cockpit seat.
Yeah.
That's just yet another concern to keep across. I'm going to send you the footage so you can have a look, but just based on what I've explained, what do you think?
Well, if it is the case that it is the cockpit chair or some... Isn't there like a switch the pilots are hitting by mistake?
So in the LATAM, incident, it was to do with an error where an error in the design where you could easily trigger the switch, and the pilot in command was pushed forward against the control column. There is a mechanism. Boeing had issued a directive after to ensure protections were in place to protect the seat from accidentally kind of being pushed forward.
Yeah.
But I mean, just a bit concerning that they're referring to it as.
Yeah, I just feel like if that's the case, at least it's nothing new or nothing different. At least it's something we know about. It's something that could be addressed without having to ground the entire global fleet of 787s, which would be obviously a catastrophe. So, yeah.
That's the reason why I wanted to get this mentioned kind of on the record early, because this could be one of those early factors that then, you know, later on down the line, we know that we only knew XYZ because, for example, it happened on United Southern. Could be nothing. Could be clear air turbulence, could be to do with the weather, could be to do with the atmosphere and the pressure, and everything to do with the fact that when you are flying near to the equator, you can have some weird kind of different circumstances, different encounters that are linked with weather and meteorology and so on. But it's something that flight crew are trained for. Could be that. But anyway, the NTSB have confirmed that they are investigating. They've said a report has to be out within 30 days. So we will bring that to you. I'll flip now to another quick topic before we get going. Do you have something to do with the fact that SAS are signing a deal with Starlink?
What? Okay, can I ask, why do you think it's weird that SAS is signing a deal with Starlink?
Because I do feel there has been new energy at SAS. They've suddenly got some kind of mojo back, right? They are trying their best. And I you know, hats off to them. They are trying their best. In all these different ways, it seems they are throwing everything they have at making sure that this airline is a better airline. So the announcement the other day is that next-gen Wi-Fi, Starlink, of course, Elon Musk's SpaceX, is coming to SAS flights. SAS boasting that, quote, you can even enjoy high-speed internet over remote areas like the North Pole or the Atlantic Ocean, rolling out fleet-wide in late 2025 and free for Eurobonus members. You rock up to today's podcast wearing the official colours of SAS. I couldn't help but wonder if you were the middleman in such a deal.
I would have loved to take credit for that, but no. I mean, I agree with you, though, that SAS is really, you can tell there's new energy since Air France-KLM invested. Perfect background for this topic, if you're watching this video. But yeah, I love that we're seeing something happening at SAS, some changes, improvements. And yeah, I think this is a great one in line. You know, we see all types of airlines on all types of budget levels talking about introducing Starlux? Starlink. Yeah, I'm confusing myself. United, for example, Air France, of course, is also going to install it. So from that perspective, maybe Air France was like, hey, guys, you want even more aircraft? Can we get a deal here?
You still haven't tried Starlink, and you have to because it is a game changer on board. You have to.
Yeah, but I mean, I tell you all the time how much I don't really like having fast Wi-Fi on planes because I don't want to feel like I'm forced to stay productive, because being on a flight is the perfect time to just unwind and disconnect and focus on making my videos. So,
do you know what? I heard a story actually that really kind of really took a moment, almost like one of those reality check stories, right? Sorry to bring the tone down slightly, but it is real life, right, in this ever-changing world. So there were a flight crew, so a first captain and a first officer, and they were operating on a flight that had Starlink Wi-Fi. And the first officer asked the captain, why have you not logged on? You know, when they have their controlled rest breaks, for example, and also their phone is able to be connected in the flight deck, just in the background. And he said that the reason why he never connected to onboard Wi-Fi is because while he was flying the aircraft, the last thing he wanted was to hear from a relative about his very elderly parents, for example, who he knew, you know, any day. And similarly with a relative that was unwell, he didn't want to find out while he was the pilot in command flying so many lives. Now, arguably, that's really, really like massive respect to having that perspective and thought process. But also, it is that weird, ever-changing world, isn't it? Where, as you say, we now are completely connected and know everything. Even from being helpless at 38,000 feet, potentially for 10 or so hours, with ultimately nothing you can do other than just be in touch.
It's tough. I think it is fantastic, of course, to have the option to, if you want to be connected, you can be, you can have fast speed. But I keep getting these like videos on Instagram or something, like 90s nostalgia. Like, oh, look at the shopping mall in the 90s, not a single cell phone in sight. And now we look back and it, like, you romanticize it so much. Just thinking about a time where everyone wasn't constantly on their phones. You go on a subway in some city and nine out of 10 people are on their phone. Like, it's so sad what has become of the world.
I'm forever pointing out, like, I say, look at their necks. And there's like, you see about eight different people in the like position with their neck, yeah, because they're just, you know, scrolling and everything. It's, it is too much. You're really good. We've spoken about it before. You're really good with keeping your boundaries with messaging. He's so good at keeping boundaries, guys. He doesn't even reply to me. How is it the opposite?
Because I'm always very quick at responding to texts, unlike someone else. But anyway, let's just agree that it is, you know, there was a time when I feel like it was very nice that you didn't have to be connected on your phone all the time. Yeah. But, you know, without that technological advancement, we wouldn't be here today talking about planes. So...
Before, again, moving into a subject that we haven't previously discussed, you and I, not even in the briefing for this episode, but I'll just bring it up now, is that I've been reading that Boeing are deeply concerned at just how close Elon Musk is with now President Trump, because he is in Trump's ear about a whole load of things, but Boeing are also guessing he is in his ear about how terrible Boeing are performing, how they lack innovation, how nothing has changed, how they're struggling to deliver anything from a 787 to a regular aircraft, let alone the new stuff coming out, the 777X and everything. And apparently now, in this wait and see as to how the relationship is going to be between Trump 2.0 and Boeing, there is legitimate concern that Trump will be incredibly... kind of skeptical about, rather than where previously in the beginning, in the first time round, he was kind of like Boeing, America first and blah, blah, blah. He now looks at Boeing as this company that's like, you know, stark and heavy and a dinosaur compared to Elon Musk's entities that are able to achieve the impossible overnight with little build up. And what do you think we're going to see with Trump 2.0 and Boeing?
So in a way, I hope that they are continue to be hard on Boeing and, you know, try to get the quality up. But at the same time, we don't want Elon Musk coming. I mean, he has no direct power over the company, just like Trump doesn't have direct power. But Elon's strategy seems to be to slash employees, slash this and that, which in an industry where safety is so paramount and there's so many checks and redundancies, you don't want any slashing. You want to keep, you know, every expertise, every person who knows what they're doing. I just, you know, the irony is that the problem is Boeing's constant just drive for profits and disregarding, prioritizing profits and returns over safety. That's the thing that needs to be addressed. We don't need to address profits in any way by being like, let's, you know, lay off employees or anything like that. It's just improve change the priority for Boeing.
Well, at the same time, it's that I don't want Boeing to feel that weird pressure to suddenly feel that because they are lacking in innovation, that's where the priority should be. It's like, no. Hopefully, under the leadership of Stephanie Pope, it is quite clear that the priority should be safety and quality over the chase for profits, because the chase for profit got them into the mess that they're in right now.
Yeah. And listen, it's always been that Boeing and Airbus have competing aircraft types. So, like, you know, you have the 787 and A330neo are kind of the closest capacity-wise competitors, although people compare it to the A350. But now, for the first time, because of Boeing's problems and them not being able to keep up, we have a situation where Airbus has the A321neo LR or XLR that Boeing doesn't really have an answer to. There's no equivalent range-wise. And I feel like Boeing and Americans are like, this is not good. For the industry, maybe it's not great. But for now, we don't need a situation where they're just always trying to offer competing aircraft types. We just need Boeing to have safe aircraft, and then we can focus eventually on
reliable quality. Yeah.
And eventually we can return to having, you know, a nice balance of competition, hopefully. But for now, like you said, we don't need any more what's next from Boeing, because that shouldn't be the priority.
Yeah. Did you see the development at London City Airport, where they've applied to the Civil Aviation in the UK, the regulator, for permission to begin A320neo operations at City. So to put things, just to set the scene a bit, in the UK right now, obviously there is a Labour government since the summer, and there is the expectation that they're supposed to be pro-business, right? At least that's what they say, even if their actions don't always reflect that. And with that, all the airports are vying for some kind of expansion. And in the UK, airport expansion, specifically in London and around London, is forever blocked. I mean, you know, we're not going to talk about the Heathrow expansion and the third runway debate. I think that was one of my first ever broadcasts ever, 14 years old, taking part on the third runway debate. So all these London airports are trying to get clever, aside from Heathrow, I mean, in terms of how they can, quote, expand, even if it doesn't mean knocking down 200, 300 houses, displacing hundreds of people, but rather just being a bit more, you know, clever or agile or whatever, innovative with what they've got, right? And yeah. So City are not the only ones. Gatwick are hoping to be able to activate the emergency runway. That's a little bit too close to the main runway. You've got Stansted that wants a go-ahead as well for greater capacity options in terms of expanding and blah, blah, blah. But with City have applied for 320neo operations, which could pave the way for operators to bring the 320neo to ultimately unlock leisure destinations to coexist with the Embraers that currently operate at London City Airport and the Airbus A220s. So firstly, when did you last fly from City, and how could this work, I wonder? Let us discuss this.
Well, you are the Londoner, the London expert. Yep. I haven't flown to London City since like 2018 or something, so okay. It's been a while.
Okay, it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's always an enjoyable ride because you have the steep takeoff or the steep approach either, so that's fun. If anyone has flown from City, you'll know how easy it is, right? You only need to be there about 30 minutes before departure. So that's great. And you get through in really, really quickly through security and whatnot. It's great for connecting you with the financial hubs, your Zurichs, your Frankfurts, blah, blah, blah. But in terms of leisure destinations, British Airways has only just kind of gone into this area of operating to some leisure destinations, specifically over the long summer. So let's say from about April, May, throughout right up until the end of October. But there's only so much they can do. If the 320neo is approved to fly into City, the biggest question I have, which I can't quite figure out the answer to yet, is how it would operate with, for example, BA's existing 320neo capacity. So you're talking about almost 200 people on board the aircraft. As far as I understand, that is simply too heavy for an aircraft to be certified to fly into City, because uniquely it is nestled right in the financial district, Canary Wharf. You've got the towers around you. You have special training for flight crew who operate into London City Airport for the steep approach. It's a steep takeoff. You have obstacle awareness and avoidance training for flight crew because of the buildings around. And you have payload restrictions. And look no further than the fact that British Airways used to operate the A318, which is the baby bus. They used to operate that to New York in an all business class configuration of a little over 30 passengers on board. Did you ever do that?
No, I had booked it at some point and it didn't end up happening, but I'm so bummed. Like, did you do it?
I didn't do it. I was also booked on it and I decided against it at the last minute because I found the reviews were not great. Yeah. Even though people spoke about the convenience of City, and of course you did pre-clearance because it wasn't direct on the way there. You had to stop in Shannon in Ireland to refuel, but also you could do pre-clearance there. So that made sense. I didn't love the idea of it being slower, flying at a lower altitude, it feeling every single bump because it was a small aircraft flying over the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. And so every time it could have been a choice, the bigger aircraft won out of that, you know, especially when the 747 was flying, you know, the same route. I'm like, okay,
yeah.
I'd rather Club World in the bubble of the 747 than pretend Club World on a BA baby bus.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they opted for a special seat only on the baby bus that they didn't have in the yeah. rest of their fleet, which at the time was better than regular Club World. So I feel like there was definitely an era when that was a sweet spot, a great flight to take. But then as things, you know, American Airlines started getting better seats, so people might book the joint venture partner instead of BA to get a nice direct aisle access seat. Or then BA started introducing club suites at then 2019.
Well, yeah, when the baby bus 20 was years later.
yeah. But at least, like, you know, nowadays, I think there wouldn't, if people were going to choose between two configured A318, which I guess usually cost a bit more versus a Heathrow.
Yeah, it did cost more because you were being offered a tailor-made experience. You were being offered something that was, you know, including pre-clearance. So you arrived into the US as a domestic flight, which of course is a game changer for anyone that's arrived to JFK needing to queue for 3+ hours, unless you're American like Dan, in which case he knows nothing about that. But go on,
I do because when I travel with non-Americans, I'm screwed.
Yeah. That makes sense.
The interesting thing also about London is when in Europe, we're just so used to what aviation looks like. And when you think about the fact that London Heathrow is, I think, still the world's busiest two runway airport in terms of movements.
Yeah.
There's so much. Whenever I see like KLM sending an Embraer 190 or SAS sometimes sending a CRJ 900, at least they used to, even Air France sending their A220s, it's like, guys, this shouldn't really be at Heathrow. Like, you're wasting space, you know? Because,
you know what? Not holding space, but wasting space.
Yeah. Because you look at an airport like Dubai, which is the world's busiest international airport, there are like 100 less movements per week at Dubai. Like, there's like 4,300, I think, right now in Dubai, 4,400 per week at Heathrow. But then you compare the capacity per flight, the difference is wild. And that, like, I just feel sometimes, of course, in Europe, we want frequency. We want the convenience of having multiple flights a day to many places. But part of the problem for Heathrow and for London is that just the traffic and capacity in Europe is so different than it is. And if we go to, you know, Hong Kong and Singapore as well, the proportion between wide bodies and narrow bodies, especially for shorter flights, is just wrong.
I had that feeling when I was sitting on the A380 a couple of weeks ago, and we were directly behind a Logan Air.
Yes.
Little ATR. Thing from Scotland. No, it wasn't. What was it?
They do fly an ATR to Heathrow, which is wild.
It wasn't an ATR, though, which ATR is, I mean, that's the definition of a slot waster, isn't it? That's let's have a look what it was. I'm sure I took a photo. But anyway, it was tiny, and I'm sitting behind it in an A380. It looks like it's half the size of my tire, right? Like, it's just absolutely tiny. Yeah, it was. It was an Embraer. It was a 145.
Which is also crazy. And of course, you see in Asia or even the US, airlines are opting for bigger aircraft like United, Delta. They're aiming for the A321neo, not the 320 even. In Asia, of course, the A321 is sort of becoming the standard small aircraft in their fleets. Yet in Europe, we keep, we have a ton of A220s. A320neo is still the standard instead of A321neo, which, you know, for British Airways, it is interesting how they can't seem to fill the bigger aircraft. But I guess we could do a whole dissection on what is.
I know. And it's funny where the 321s sometimes end up, because when I was flying to the to southern Spain not too long ago, it was a totally empty flight. I think there were about 14 of us on board. And of course, it was the flight that was a 321neo.
Yeah.
And when we landed, we're coming in for the approach, and we're you know, it's that moment, you're anticipating the touchdown, right? And I'm thinking, okay, in my head, 50, 40, 30, 20, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, and then down, like, really, really, really hard landing. Crazy. Everyone, well, the only 14 people on the flight, like, all gasping, including the crew. Yeah. And Hats off to the pilot, the captain. She came on, as is customary for BA after. And she said, oh, she just wanted to apologise for the, she said, slightly firmer touchdown. She said, it's an incredibly light aircraft because there's barely any of us on there. And of course, it's the longest, you know, 321 member of the 320 family. So you have that ground effect where it floats, 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 and she struggled to get it down. It's like land because it just wants to fly. It's so light and nimble and long. It's funny. Oh, yeah. Good old aerodynamics.
14 passengers. They could have sent an ATR. Why not?
Yeah, well, then I wouldn't have been on it, would I? You sent me something which is quite interesting, which is why you are sitting right now outside Amsterdam's grey, gloomy hub. Thank God for the KLM splash of colour. Could you not have found a photo where the sun was out? That just
looks depressing.
I couldn't find
one. I'm not joking.
Oh my God. What happened with you and your bailiff friends from... from Amsterdam, because this, all I know is this involves a Saudi jet, 60 people with unpaid compensation that a court order ruled three times they were owed, and bailiffs seizing fuel. Please do the honors and take us through it.
So this is the story. A Saudi 787 flying from Amsterdam to Jeddah, let me pull everything up here, was delayed because bailiffs came on board trying to claim a debt that Saudia apparently owed from 2022. So we're 5 years past when this debt was due. It only affected 67 passengers, which if you think about the capacity, even on a 787-10, which this flight was operated by, we're like, you know, at a sixth of the capacity of that aircraft.
Yeah.
But because of, okay, the people who had sent the bailiffs in to stop the aircraft was a EU compensation help company called EU Claims, which...
This is astounding, the fact that they were able to do this, but this is not the first time. Go on.
No, exactly. So I think the biggest one, that the one I've used before, is called Air Help. This is another option. And what's amazing is that they have been fighting in court for these 67 passengers for years. So although, you know, the maximum compensation these passengers could be owed is 600 euros per person... So we have, let me whip the calculator out fast, 600 times 67, 40,000 euros. Then in addition to that, EU claim, because they had been fighting this in court, have incurred legal costs, which
of course,
they
legal
believe,
fees.
Exactly. So they believe they're right. They believe Saudia should be on the hook for these legal fees. So what ended up happening is that their EU claim knew they were right. So they sent people in to Amsterdam to try to stop a Saudi aircraft from taking off. And what they ended up doing is they seized the aircraft's fuel supplies. And something that I find funny, and I'm very curious about how it happened, they also seized navigation maps from the aircraft, which...
So basically, they seize the fuel and they take the maps away from perhaps reaching the... I mean, how's that working in a paperless cockpit?
Because the maps should be in the cockpit already, right?
Right, yeah. And on the iPads as well, not necessarily, you know.
Yes.
So that's interesting.
I mean, the fuel,
right?
The fuel is like enough not to be able to leave, right? So the aircraft ended up just sitting there for 90 minutes while the airline was trying to decide what to do. And eventually they realized, if we want to send this flight away without having to pay 600 euros to each passenger on board this flight...
On board this flight, right?
Yeah, before this becomes 3 hours delayed, we're going to have to pay up. So they actually did end up paying. And then EU claim the bailiffs released the flight and let it go. And this is just such a fascinating situation, right?
The legal side is that they had, because the airline had ignored three court orders that the ruling was to pay these passengers. Instead, they had issued a warrant that ultimately gave, and there were no staff from EU claim present, but gave bailiffs the right to be able to get airside, seize assets related to the company Saudia. Would have been too extreme perhaps to have seized an aircraft worth tens of millions of dollars, but went for the fuel instead and the weather map. I'm not sure. Yeah. Was it the weather map or the navigation map? Right. Okay. Yeah. I don't know how that worked. But anyway, but see, so puts a hold on the aircraft being refueled, yeah. Forcing Saudia's hand to take this seriously, no longer ignore. And, you know, how much was the total? 40K?
50,000 euros with the legal fees.
What is 50K to Saudia? Nothing. Yeah. You know, in the grand scheme of things, pennies, right? So it's funny that they've even been trying to avoid paying out for something that the EU is very good at ensuring doesn't slip away. And look, yeah. They got them on a grey drizzly day in 2025, but some almost 3 years later.
Yeah. I mean, I just love this story so much because I feel like often as a consumer, you feel so powerless against a big company. Yeah. And even if the law is on your side, in this case, it's not a European company. So you feel a bit like, what can I do about it? Even though 600 euros is a lot of money to be missing out on, especially
to an individual,
if you're traveling,
of course.
As you know, more than one person. So it's just so incredibly satisfying. And I feel so incredibly grateful that Europe not only has EU 261 and the UK has UK 261 to protect passengers, but also that legal entities are allowed to take action if airlines don't follow through.
Wow. Let me tell you this. Ever since I saw this, and you may be aware of this, I sent what had happened to a few airline CEOs in my contact book just to get their thoughts. And all of them replied a bit like, whoa, you know, that's,
good.
That's something we need to, you know. And I thought, okay, that's good. Because as you say, you know, this arguably now goes down as a firm case study that, look, Saudia tried to avoid paying 60 passengers, and 3 years later in Amsterdam, they had their fuel seized. They nearly had a whole brand new flight delayed. Owing that flight could have been full. You could have owed in excess of 300 passengers. So it's an interesting little case study and definitely a win for the consumer. And what a flex from, for example, EU claim, these companies that are able to actually... You know, we're so used to, aren't we, talking about, but then in the end, they can't do anything. But in the end, nothing changes or whatever. But the fact they're able to seize their fuel is like, you guys are wild.
Yeah, it really is amazing. And View from the Wing has made me so excited because in an article here, he listed several other examples of when bailiffs have gotten involved in compensation claims in Europe. And the levels, the disparity between the claim amounts that we're talking about in some of these cases are wild. Because, for example, here he shares one story about, this was in the UK, Delta Airlines check-in was halted at Heathrow, entirely halted, because they had bailiffs threatening to seize the airplane over one debt owed to one passenger of $3,400. They halted... Wow. All of Delta's check-in until they paid that. Then an even crazier situation at London Luton, bailiffs showed up as well, delaying a Wizz Air flight to collect a refund that was owed to one passenger, which caused a delay, meaning that every passenger on board was owed EU compensation.
Because
Wizz Air had
I don't feel sorry for Wizz, and I know you won't either, because Wizz have behaved like cowboys over recent years when it comes to leaving the fare-paying passenger out of pocket. I've got a friend... She's a friend of my sister. She got in touch with me the other day. She said, I need a quick bit of advice. She said, I am booked to fly on three trips, one in May, one in June, one in July. And she's booked via a tour operator or an online travel agency as a package. And she said, I'm quite organized. So I just went on to check things like timings and blah, blah, blah. And of course, she has noticed that in all three bookings to three different destinations, all Wizz flights on booking 1, 2, and 3 cancelled. Has she had an email? No. Have they let her know by text message? Nothing. You know, she's quite across these things. Nothing. So just because she was savvy enough to go in and check, she's now getting herself sorted and she knows her rights and what to do and the fact that she's owed a refund and whatnot. But it's like, you know, yet again, Wizz trying to get those early cancellations in while it can. leaving the inevitable late cancellations in the summer that will follow, when these airlines sell a schedule that are far too ambitious compared to what they can actually deliver. And this happens every single year. The beginning of the year, we hear from airline CEOs like Varadi at the top of Wizz, who will admit that because of Airbus problems with the supply chain, they're not going to get enough aircraft to be able to deliver a good summer schedule this year. And then nothing changes to their operation. Oh, that's right, until you reach summer. And then there's endless cancellations, leaving people fighting for months for compensation. And you've got to be digitally savvy, and you can't be elderly and need assistance because you've got to chase them every day, and they don't have a phone line. So you have to, all this stuff we've spoken about. So yeah, the fact that they turned up at London Luton just to get one person's refund because it was Wizz, I am all for it. And I applaud the individual and any individuals who chase ultimately what they are owed. And you are a great champion of the consumer with that, aren't you, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that even I've been in so many situations where you just feel helpless against an airline or any big company. And, you know, I'm lucky to have my YouTube channel and a following that if I need to, I can actually complain to. But even then, it's like you just feel powerless. So I know from my friends, my family, when they're in these situations, you feel like so many airlines don't care at all. And there's no consideration of what is actually good in the long term for your relationship with a customer a lot of the time.
Especially when they're low cost and they don't give a, you know.
Yeah. But even full service airlines like, you know, Lufthansa Group being infamous for doing everything they can to wiggle their way out of compensation. And I remember reading somewhere, I don't know, remember when or where, but the Delta in their customer service system, and of course Delta are not exactly the world champions of customer service, but we do have to give US Airlines credits for being very quick when something goes wrong to offer compensation or to help. So easy in their access system, for agents, in order to empower people lower in the hierarchy, they have an option like, what is your motivation for making this change or making this whatever, in case of a delay or a cancellation, you can choose a reason, good customer service, which I'm like, thank you. That's how it should be at every big company.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, just empower the employees to think.
So you're saying that they are able to justify, they're able to justify why they are making such a decision just by purely saying because it's the right thing to do.
Yes. Which is good. Amazing. That's really good.
That's an interesting little tidbit. How did you find out about that?
Well, that's what I was trying to tell you before. I have no idea where I read this or when, but I know it's a thing.
Okay, let's do some Q&A. We have a question here from Paolo. He's in touch via Instagram. He says, hi guys, I would first like to say that I love your content, especially your podcast. Oh. I've just realized it was, hi Alex, I would first like to say that I love your content, especially your podcast with Dan. That's what he says. I have a question regarding flight cancellation. Am I eligible for compensation, topical, if another person cancels my ticket on my behalf without my consent? To give context, I have a group booking with Singapore Airlines. We were scheduled to fly from Manila to Rome via Singapore in March. Sadly, my friend cancelled my flight without my consent. When I called Singapore Airlines, they said that the friend was authorized to cancel without my consent since there was a schedule change to the flight prior to the cancellation, and that allowed for cancellations to be done despite my ticket being non-refundable at first. Furthermore, the representative also mentioned that you can cancel another person's ticket for as long as you are one of the other passengers in the same booking. Appreciate any help you can give me. This is an interesting one that I haven't thought about, aside from every time I make changes to a family booking on BA and it asks me every single time, do you have permission to put Demi in 10 Alpha? And I'm like, yes, she doesn't get a say. I'm in charge.
This story sounds like there's a lot of tea we're not being included in.
Paolo, because there's why the friend cancelled unilaterally. No, of course, that's none of our business. But of course, if you want to share it, we're all ears. But anyway, it's none of our business. What do you think? I would say that there is a clause, but I don't know if Singapore Airlines have it, that you have to have the permission of every other passenger in the booking to be able to make a change to any to anything that affects that passenger. British Airways is a great example, as I just joked, that if you do so much as try to allocate the seats for the three of you in a booking, especially if the last names are different, then it does ask you if you have permission. And you have to tick that box specifically and state that you do. Therefore, kind of contractually obliging to that term or that condition. Do Singapore Airlines have that, or is it standard in aviation? I would have to check this out.
Yeah. I mean, regardless, I think this is going to be tough to fight with Singapore Airlines. You know, they're not going to, you could potentially fight it and say that my friend didn't have my permission, so I want, I don't know, my ticket reinstated or something. But regardless, I think it's going to be, it's like a not worth the fight. And there's definitely no legal basis for a compensation. The only thing I could imagine is Singapore Airlines reinstating the ticket, but that seems highly unlikely. And it just seems like a very unfortunate situation. And honestly, shocking, like, because as we are both obviously the ones who have control over bookings all the time. Even if I'm traveling with my friends, I control the bookings. So new fear unlocked. Of course, I hope my friends wouldn't do this, but like, I've never thought about what if they go in and just like change our plans.
Hold on. You have definitely been reluctant to give me one of your PNRs before when I said, hey, I need your booking reference, Dan. I want to, you know, do you a little, I don't know, welcome gift or something. And you, it's like a struggle to get you to hand it over.
With you, all our listeners will understand why I don't want to give you my random PNR for a trip you have nothing
you're
to
the
do
one,
with.
You're the one missing out on upgrades, okay? Look at the time you did give me your PNR. Boom! First class on the A380.
No, you know, first of all, I'm very lucky
to we don't need to discuss it further.
Cabin.
You can just
Second
move to
all,
the next question.
Leave my bookings alone. Okay. I have a question here from Nikki J. Nikki says, hi Dan, hope you're having a lovely day. I want to share a question for the podcast. On your episode on November 1st, 2023, you had mentioned in the conversation about children on board business class that you can't stand the fact when they run around the cabin and are badly behaved. This made me think when I was little, doing the transatlantic hop from Heathrow to San Francisco and vice versa on BA's 747s, I was a very jolly, well-behaved and curious little child at the time, no older than 5 or 6. Walking around quietly in the cabin, especially business class, sometimes even peeking in first and affording a quick glance on the upper deck always had me in awe. I accredit those 747 experiences to getting me into aviation later in life. I have to agree with you that most children nowadays are badly behaved, and I would also probably get an ulcer from the ways parents can't keep them under control. But I must add that one person's annoyance may be another child's amazement. So he's asking, admittedly, children are less well behaved nowadays, but wouldn't affording them a discreet glance around the cabin, be it with a parent or a cabin crew, help in inspiring these youngsters to fly more and foster a love of air travels? And would we revise our opinions with that in mind?
I don't think our opinions need revision, because I think what you've described is a different scenario. I think anyone in any scenario, well-behaved and being inspired by aviation, great. We were quite specific. Naughty kids. I don't want them in restaurants near me. I don't want them on the plane near me. It's not a me thing. It's not a whatever. I think just generally there has been a decline in parents that are just unable to say no, right? Yeah. It's this, let me reintroduce you into another task because I'm afraid that you're going to have a just say no, you know, they're not allowed or whatever. So, and also, we are super aware if we have kids near us that are, no, I'm not just talking about spectacularly well-behaved, but just, you know, well-behaved. For example, my mom is always the first one to tell those parents, like, you've got a great kid, or, yeah, oh, you know, she's lovely, or whatever. Like, because it is a good thing. But these passengers that decide, no, well, I've got a kid, so it's going to be horrible for everyone. It's like, no,
yeah,
that's not fair. It's not fair in a restaurant. It's not fair in the library. It's not fair.
No, and the cabin crew most certainly are not the parents or responsible for taking care of the kids.
They're not the nanny.
I had this like wild contrast on a Finnair flight I took a few weeks ago. It was in economy on their Embraer 190. So in the row in front, the entire row, there were two parents with their two kids who must have been about maybe 3 or 4 and 6 and 7. They were American. Okay. Then behind me was the exact same setup, but with a Swedish family, same age kids, everything. And like the contrast was shocking. Obviously, we are not parents. We know it's extremely difficult to be parents. So we'll preface with that.
We do preface that, don't we? We know, I'm not taking away how difficult it is for things like air travel with kids and the air pressure with their ears and the change of environment, change of routine. Fully sympathize with all of that. I get that as a task.
So just to compare and contrast then, the kids in the row behind me were shouting, kicking our seats, saying, Mommy, I want to watch Spider-Man. Mommy, I want to watch Spider-Man. When can we watch Spider-Man?
These are the American Swedish kids.
The Swedish kids.
Oh, these are the Swedish kids.
Yeah, okay. I want to watch Spider-Man. When are we? And then like, after we take off, just wait. No, I want to watch it now. Like throwing a tantrum. Yeah. And the other kid was shouting about something else. In the row in front, the two parents, as soon as they boarded, pulled out a stack about this big with 10 books that they had brought to prepare. And they were both quietly reading to their children the entire 1.5 hour flight. The children were so well behaved, just listening, maybe dozing off a bit. The parent, like, you could tell it was a lot of effort. It was an early morning flight. They're sitting there, they have to read, but it was just an example of, it comes down to what the kid is like, sure, but also it's the parent's responsibility to be prepared for the flight and do what it takes to, you know, make the kid happy, keep them calm. And I just had to give such huge kudos to those American parents because they put in a lot of effort and everyone appreciated it, especially when you had that contrast of the row in front and the row behind.
Yeah. No, it's so true. That's why I would say that it is to be complimented, not just accepted in this, you know, generational shift where we just have to accept that, oh, kids are behaved bad now. So there's nothing you can do about it in the event of air travel. No, that's not how we grew up. So, and that wasn't that long ago.
Or is it?
I don't know. Our ages are a secret. Well, look, that's really cool. We have loads
really
of
cool.
That's cool that we are hiding our age. No, we do have a lot of Q&A, but we both have to run. So we'll do an extended Q&A in next week's episode because a lot of you guys have sent in some very long form questions that we want to get to and look at. But also quite a few of you have sent in questions that actually Dan and I have agreed we're going to kind of look at and find the answers to before we come back to these kind of situational anecdotes and whatever. We'll try and have a look at the in between now and then, the legality of me cancelling your flight in our booking and so on. And we'll see who's going to come out with that to help Paolo, who's written in. And in the meantime, I guess we'll say we'll see you next week.
We will. We will see you next week on air. Bye, guys.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.